Hello again, Bird fans. It's Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Yes, we're discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, a former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident go-to avian expert. Also joining us today, a semi-regular on the program here, Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Line's already loading up. If you can't get through, just wait till someone is done talking and then try at that time. You can also comment on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ray. Good to be here.
Ray, good to be here.
Happy holidays to you,
thank you, you
both. So what's new in the bird world, Rich? You were all at Twitter about something as you walked in.
Oh, yeah. Exciting news. I mean, it happens periodically. A bird goes astray and gets the attention of the birders around the area.
Okay.
But this little guy got the attention of not only the birders, but the national media. It was all over the place.
How did I miss it?
Ray, where have you been?
I don't know.
It's out there.
Okay.
This is a painted bunting.
All right.
One of the spectacular colored birds from the south.
Can we show
that up there?
Oh, my gosh. All right. So if you're watching online, WAMC.org, and then you can just click on live video, and you can actually see Rich holding this up. Of course, by the time you do that, he will have put the book down.
So, I'll try to maintain.
Yeah, all right, blue maybe, and red and yellow and green.
It's painted
nothing
bunting.
Painted
colored
here.
Bird.
Okay, and not common up in this neck of the woods.
Not at all. Not at all found. In fact, this is the first instance where one of these resplendent males showed up in Brooklyn, New York. And that's where it was. Prospect Park in Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah. And
boy, did it get lost.
Well, It found a happy place. There's a native plant material garden down there that they built specifically to encourage native plants and wild food of that nature. And this guy found that spot and moved right in and loved it.
Wow.
He's been there now for a couple of weeks, and if things hold well, he'll stick around. If not, he'll have to beat feet back south.
It'd be lonely, right? Just one bird up in Brooklyn?
Well, he's got company, but, you know, all the locals, all the homeboys are there. Oh,
I see. I see. And well said. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. The Christmas bird count is dead ahead, right?
Next week. They begin next week. And the Catskill Christmas bird count will be coming up on Tuesday. And other local counts will be coming up on the Saturday or Sunday of the next weekend and subsequent weekends. And information on that, I mean, it's a great opportunity to get out, join with other birders, and participate in a good citizen science endeavor.
Okay. Well, Brian Shields and I were talking about this in the newsroom last week, because obviously it's not that exciting in the newsroom. And how is it that you can count the birds and not be sure that you're not doubling up and counting the same bird 12 times?
You take measures. You try to limit your count to one time only, and you do that by moving around. And the robin here is not the same robin as there, because they're several miles apart. And and then there are ways of ratcheting down, of filtering out duplicates. A big bird like a bald eagle, for example, we go through the various groups that report the numbers and location of their bald eagle sightings and the time. And we go through there and say, this adult, well, not the same as that immature that these two groups saw at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's ways of checking that out. But usually, you go through an area, you count the birds, and you move on.
Right.
And
now,
the likelihood is that it's a whole different new mix of new birds.
So how big of an area?
Well, it's a 15-mile diameter circle.
Okay.
That's covered. And within that circle, depending on the number of volunteers available, the circle is divided up into little sections.
How many?
Well, in the Catskill count, we usually run about 10 sections.
Okay, but again,
3 or 4 members of each party go out and cover the 10 sections and count the birds that they see or hear.
And how long do you stand in one spot?
As long as you choose to. That's up to the particular group. And all of that, you know, if it's a hot spot and you got a lot of action, you stick around. If it's, kind of cold and not going anywhere, you move on. So, and over the years, you learn to go where to go.
Right.
Within your section. So you know the good spots and you go hit them. You know, part of the game is to count as many birds as you can.
Yeah.
And the other part of the game is to be a little competitive, and that's to outdo the other groups. So, you know, you want to get that.
So there's cheating going on? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we try to make sure that the cheaters get out it out and make sure that we
know. Well, how do you do that?
Well, there's ways of telling.
I counted 47 robins, and how do you know I didn't see two?
We put bright lights on the people and
you see,
interrogate
this is
them.
The problem that with the Catskill bird count, isn't it?
It's not a problem at all. No, our groups are very ethical. They count the birds. They don't try to weasel their way through some spectacular bird species. And, you know, as a compiler, you learn to reject certain individual counts and numbers. And, you know, you learn it's improbable. If you got the picture, that goes a long way in validating a bird.
Is there any gambling that goes on? Between
side
sections?
Bets, I'm not sure. Yeah. You know, we don't necessarily endorse it, nor do we prohibit it. I'm not being a gambler myself. I don't want to take any chances. But there may be a donut or a cup of coffee involved. Maybe.
What do you think, Nancy? If we go long enough, you think Rich can really dig a hole here for himself?
If he asks the right questions.
Yeah, I think we're getting there. We're going to go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Richard in Vineland, New Jersey. Welcome back, Richard.
Hi there, guys. Hey, I went out birding last week down to a refuge down here in South Jersey, and I saw a lot of ducks and geese and swans, and then I heard a weird sound right out in the middle of the marsh. So I'm wondering if you guys might have a clue as to what it might have been.
What you
got?
Ready?
Ready.
All right. It was something like this. It went, woof, 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 woof.
That's a
Which
dog.
Which sounds kind of like an owl, but it was like 40 minutes after dawn already.
Okay. And you say this was out in the marsh.
Yeah, we're right out in a you know regular estuary down in South Jersey. Yeah, salt marsh.
Okay, I'm going to take a wild guess that what you were listening to was a rail.
Really?
Rails have that kind of whoosh sound that they make, and repeat it a couple of times. The Virginia rail or the clapper rail, which would be more likely in a salt marsh in southern New Jersey.
Yeah, I've seen clappers there, but I've always heard them do that clacker sound.
Right,
you know,
yeah. But they also have, and it may be generated by some wing beating.
Well, that's what I thought at first, but I've heard swans beat their wings, and this wasn't quite right, although it might have been.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
A deep, loud whoosh, whoosh, whoosh like that could be the mute swan as it takes off.
Yeah.
They make that good call. I think that's what you got.
Yeah, but see, I didn't see anybody flying out, you know what I mean? But maybe everything looked quiet on the marsh. That's what struck me, why I didn't think it was wing beats, but maybe I just didn't see it. Yeah.
Well, then the rail is another good possibility. They're very secretive. They do well at hiding.
Yeah,
and,
I know,
have that
I know.
Boom, 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 boom. Call.
Okay. Oh, good.
Wow.
All right.
Rich,
I hadn't thought of rails. Okay.
They'd be making that call. Do they make that your own?
It depends on whether they're an incentive or not. Yes, they can respond to another one that they might have heard further off in the distance. Mm-hmm. So it may be communication.
Yeah, I heard at least two different sounds.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't just one animal doing it.
Right. You know. Well, then it's probably one each talking to one another.
Oh,
and you
cool.
were just
All right.
You were just listening in.
Hey, Richard, thanks for starting the
Great.
Program
thanks
with sound effects. We love that on the show. Let's go to Kelly in Saugerties. Kelly.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Kelly.
I have a question. I got gifted some hens and a rooster and three guinea hens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all in the same area. I have them caged in for the winter. Should I separate the guinea fowls from the other birds? Because they're starting to get semi-aggressive with the hens.
You're talking about regular chickens?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I don't know the reaction between guinea hens or guinea fowl and barnyard chickens. I would think they would get along, but, you know, there is a certain pecking order out there, and your guinea fowl might have picked the top of the heap.
Yeah, I think so, but someone recently told me that they can stay outdoors and that they really don't need, like, to be in an enclosure during wintertime.
Well, they are. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just find that, like, I would think that they would need, like, an overhang or something for warmth.
Well, I think they're hardy enough to withstand the cold. I've seen them out there. But you want to be a little careful about predators. With coyotes on the move out there now, I think they would make an easy pickings. So I would try to give them at night shelter just for their own good well-being.
Okay. All right, thank you so much.
Okay.
Kelly, thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie is here. Nancy Costello, we talk birds. Let's go to Mary Jo in Bern. Mary Jo.
Well, actually, this is Emily in Plainfield.
Oh, I hit the wrong button. Well, you're still welcome on the program, Emily, and nice to have you here.
Thanks. Thank you so much. So So in late September, I was at Paradise Pond in Northampton. Smith College has a beautiful greenhouse there, and I was walking to a meeting, and I heard this bird singing away, and it was like late in the day, but I thought it was odd because it wasn't mating season, and I just heard this bird song. It was right nearby, so I investigated, and I saw this gray and white bird, bigger than a robin, sitting inside a bush, just singing to itself a multi-note song. And when I came home, I grabbed my Peterson's guide and decided it was maybe a mockingbird, but I'd never seen one before, and I wondered why it would be singing at that time of year, that time of day, so I thought I'd ask Rich if he had any ideas.
Well, I like to think he was just being happy.
Okay.
And birds will do that. You get a nice day, especially a day like today, and birds will sing at odd moments. You will hear robins singing out there, or house finches, purple finches may be singing by the feeder. And a mockingbird, yeah, they do that. They will sing right through the winter as the mood fits them.
Okay, because it was a pretty complicated song, and he or she, I guess they look alike, I'm not sure. Well, I'd never seen one before, and I just sort of told myself, you know, gray, kind of white around the breast.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, and that's what they do, and it would be a he.
Okay. Hey, Emily, or no, Mary Jo. Mm-hmm. No, who is it? Was Emily. All right, I'm all confused. Let's take a break. Zach, 1-800-348-2551. I don't know what's going on. We'll be back, perhaps.
Support for WMC comes from Kerry Haddad Gallery, Hudson, presenting Radical Inventions, an exhibit of futuristic paintings, drawings, and sculptures on view now and through December 27th. Open daily, kerryhaddadgallery.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, culture, college, cows, destinationwilliamstown.org. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. And the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. Ray Graff here. We're joined today by Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo, and we talk birds every so often, and this is probably our last one for 2015. So nice to have you both here. And Mary Jo and Bern, by golly, we'll get to you in a second. So hang on. I know I've been promising. This one came in via email. This is from Mary in Wendell, Mass. Can you please comment on the importance of regularly cleaning and disinfecting bird feeders and suet holders? Cornell Lab says that a virus affecting birds' eyes is spreading in our region. We really don't want our intended kindness to be agents of infection. And that's from Mary in Wendell.
Always a good reminder. We recommend cleaning bird feeders just as, you know, as often as you can, at least giving them a good cleanup, you know, deep cleaning, you know, a couple, three times a year.
Yeah.
You can use a weak bleach solution, which means one part bleach to nine parts water. That helps not only cut the grime in the bird feeders, but it'll kill the bacteria and, you know, disinfect the feeders. So,
yeah.
You know, feeding birds with a really mucky, yucky, moldy, just disgusting type bird feeder is really not doing them any favors. So, you know, I write a blog called The Zen Bird Feeder, and one of the things that I espouse on that is our responsibilities in feeding the birds. And part of that is helping, doing it in a responsible manner that is healthy for the birds and isn't going to do more harm than good. So, good reminder.
But to play devil's advocate, if there were no bird feeders and there was just a pool of standing water, a bird would feed at it anyway, right?
Well, the thing about that is you're drawing the birds into one particular
spot.
I get
your point, yeah.
And so they're coming back and forth and back and forth to one spot.
So keep it clean.
Pools of water, drops of dew, they're out there. They have their pick.
Okay. Right. Let's,
and people tend to also keep their bird feeders in one area. You know, natural food sources that are available or ponds that might be, or little puddles and stuff like that, they move around. You
That's true.
So there's not that concentration like there is at a bird feeder.
You make a point. Let's go now, finally, and this is the big highlight of the show. Mary Jo and Bern, are you there?
Well, you still got it. You hit the right button.
you're on. Go ahead.
I have a four-year-old grandson who lives in the Long Island area, a very suburban section of the Long Island area. And I have been looking for a book that I can present to him so that he can identify some of the backyard birds that are in his backyard. Very common birds, I would say. But I've not really had any success in locating a book that's good enough with pictures. And I'm just wondering if any of you guys have any ideas.
That's a great question for the holiday gift-giving time of year. Any ideas?
Yep, I'm going to suggest one that's put out by Don and Lillian Stokes. It's just Beginner's Guide to Birds. You're not going to have one that's specific to the Long Island area. You're probably looking at one for the eastern United States, which would cover Long Island, obviously. It does cover the most likely to be seen birds, and as a beginner guide, also most likely to be seen in a backyard or a suburban type habitat. So it's a Stokes Beginner's Guide to Birds. It might be a little bit, it'll be pushing the four-year-old, but what I like about it is that it would allow room for growth, that it would serve his purposes for a couple years before he moves into a, you know, either more adolescent range bird guide or an adult bird guide.
Very good. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Well, I hope it was worth the wait, Mary Jo. Thank you.
It was indeed. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Pittsfield. Mark, you're on.
Hey, how you doing, Rich? Listen, I have a question about seagulls. I'm like 53 years old now, and when I was a kid, we didn't see any seagulls. There were no seagulls unless you went to the ocean, maybe 20 miles, and now they're everywhere. My theory kind of is that they follow the fast food restaurants, because every time you go by a McDonald's, there's 100 seagulls out there.
Well, you got that right, Mark. That's exactly what they're doing. They found out. First of all, they probably zoomed in. Well, let me back up just a little bit. As far as seagull is concerned, there really isn't such a thing. There's lots of different gulls. There are a few that are really truly seagulls that spend their life out in the ocean, but most of them are shorebirds. They're right along the coast. They're inland. They're on the Great Lakes and the rivers. And they look down and they see this black spot on the earth. And they come down thinking it's a pond or a pool or a lake. And lo and behold, there's all sorts of good food. Well, good in the eye of the beholder. There's potato chips. There's French fries. There's leftover hamburger buns. Stuff on the ground that they find. And they say, I'm coming back here. And they bring their buddies. They bring the family. And so it's just a growing proposition, and this is what's happened over the course of the several years. So now the gulls, probably ringbill gulls, which nest up on Lake Champlain and Lake Ontario, have found all the best spots along the way between Canada and New Jersey, and they stop in, hang around, and there they are.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot. So the gulls are the winged rats of the deep.
Well, people will refer to them as that, but they're also, you know, they're opportunistic scavengers.
They're all over the beach whenever we go.
Well, that's where they...
I find it annoying, Rich. I'll be honest with you.
Well, people make it that way. People just kind of like they're too kind to an excess. And feeding them the chips and French fries and the like just emboldens them. And they lose their natural fear, and they become a little more assertive, and there they are.
And they're all over Albany, too.
Yes. They're learning.
Okay. Let's go to Mike in Saugerties. Mike, you're on with Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for taking the call. I've got some questions about bluebirds. I live in Saugerties. I live about 3 miles from the river, from the Hudson River. And I live in an area where the elevation is starting to rise. And I see, I don't want to call it flocks, but I'll see bunches of bluebirds, maybe half a dozen or so, in the spring and in the fall. But I haven't been able to attract them here during the summer, and I don't see have any spottings during the summer. What's going on?
Well, likelihood is during the nest the summer months, there's someplace nesting, and that doesn't include your yard or neighborhood. So you might look to where they nest. That would be an area with pastures, open fields, and more importantly, bluebird nest boxes. And if you have a habitat suitable for them, I would encourage you to put up a bluebird nest box or two. And encourage
them to
come in.
Well, I've had the boxes up. I'm just wondering if maybe the area I live in might be maybe too wooded. You said something about open fields they prefer?
Yes, that's their preference. Although, never say never when it comes to wild birds. They'll do what they want. But the likelihood is that they will come to an area that is on the edge of or out in exposed in a pasture, meadow. They like orchards. They like parkland settings. They like cemetery settings. They like a little bit of space between them and the next tree branch.
So when I'm seeing them in the spring and the fall, that's probably just some sort of a feeding activity?
Yes, but that's normal moving around. They're migration or foraging and scouting. They're you know, while they're out there, extended families will travel together, and then they'll pair off and find their own sites. And during that course of time, but during March and April, they'll be looking to see what's out there for them to raise their own families.
Okay. Well, it sounds like I might not have any luck attracting them for nesting. I'll just keep my eye on them for feeding then.
Yeah, well, if you have good wild berry food plantings out there, that will keep them going, and especially through the winter. And nothing wrong with the bluebird in the snow. I mean, they're very attractive that way.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Have a good day.
I just want to add one more thing, Mike, about the feeding the bluebirds. Rich mentioned the natural food sources of, you know, the berries that they'll find on trees and shrubs and vines. But what we've also found, too, is that sometimes they can be attracted to bird feeders if you're putting the right stuff out there. And probably the best thing that you could put out if you, you know, would be live mealworms, because they are insectivores. They do eat insects during the summer. But if that isn't your cup of tea, a birdseed blend that has no shells, because their beaks just cannot open shells.
Huh.
So
okay.
You put out a bird feeder that's kind of open, that has some shellless seeds, maybe some suet, with fruit in it, or that shellless seed with fruit in it, and there's a chance they could be attracted to your bird feeder. So even
well,
if you don't,
try.
Yeah, even if you don't have the habitat for nesting, you might get lucky and have them feeding.
Mike, thanks so much for the call. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, joined by Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie, and let's go to Don and Red Hook. Don, you got to turn the radio down there, Mr. Don.
Don.
Hello. Hello, Don. Turn the radio down, sir. Oh, boy. Oh, Don, call us back. You're going to get this message in a few seconds when your radio plays it. Kathleen in Worthington, Mass. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi there. I have a bird that needs identifying. A couple of weeks ago, I saw this bird going up the side of the tree, and I'm very familiar with the downy and hairy woodpeckers over here. And the interesting thing was, because I'm no expert, I came in and looked it up in a book and could not find it. It's got the reverse markings of the downy and hairy. The downy and hairy, and in my books, they had the white back, and then that's sort of outlined with black, and then the, whatever you call it, ladder back, you know, black and white on the wings. This was the opposite. It had black down the back, outlined in white, and then the black and white wings.
Okay.
Do you have any idea?
How big was it?
Pardon?
How big was it?
It was larger than the downy, more like the hairy, but even maybe a little larger than that.
Well, I'm going to suggest that what you were seeing was a young sapsucker that will have that pattern. It will be black and white on the back, or dark brown and white on the back. And then it will have a white racing stripe down the side of the on the wings.
Okay. If you're watching along at WAMC.org, you can see Rich holding his familiar book of the Crosley Guide, that is, the ID Guide.
And the sapsucker, which is a type of woodpecker, will cling to the side just like the rest of the family. And they have that black and white pattern, and I suspect that's probably what you were seeing, the yellow-bellied sapsucker, as it's called, technically.
But it was a white bar down the middle of the back. I mean, the white...
Huh. As in, well...
Like you would see in the downy or the hairy, which is black. On this, it was totally white down the middle.
Well, that would be...
I mean, excuse me, I'm saying that backwards. The downy and the hairy are white down the middle. This was black.
Okay.
Solid black down the middle of the back.
It's sometimes posture or how the wing position, that sometimes the wing position isn't separated in the back and it can look solidly black down the back.
Well, the other possibilities are some of the really rare woodpeckers that do have, but the white going down the side, the shoe fits sapsucker. So here's the trick. Can you get a picture?
Well, I'm looking at my bird book right now with the sapsucker. They don't have white going down the sides.
Well, they do.
They have that white. They have sort of the mottled back, and then the wing has some white on it.
Right.
But it doesn't have this. If you think of the hairy and the downy, they have the white going down the back, and then all along that there's black. So reverse those colors.
Yeah.
Black going down the center and a white going from his neck all the way down to the tail feathers.
Could this be a rare one?
Mm.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, it.
Well, here's the thing. Try to get a picture. Can you get a picture?
Well, I've never seen it before, and I haven't seen it since.
Oh. Well, I'm going to put my chips on the sapsucker.
Okay. Yeah.
And go ahead, prove me wrong.
Okay, so it could be a hairy. It's not a hairy or a downy or
not
a hairy downy.
I was wondering, can the hairy or the downy have a color morph that reverses the colors? That's
not,
all.
Not likely.
No.
We'll go for the horses.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, if you get a picture, let us know. And you can email Rich where?
Ah, easily. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the P is in the middle initial.
What does it stand for?
Pepper.
Pepper? You're
well,
kidding
why
me.
Not? No.
You know what? All right. So it's RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. Send that picture. And, you know, if you do, by the next
if
show.
If I ever see it again, yeah.
Yeah. Do a sketch.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call. Do a sketch. Thanks, Rich. Karen in Gallupville. Karen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have a sighting that I saw yesterday, a snowy owl.
Oh, good.
In the town of Knox.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sitting on a telephone pole for a long time.
Well, that's what they do.
Kind of looking around.
Well, good for you. The snowy owls are making a appearance again this year throughout the region. So stay tuned. There probably will be more. There was one over in Columbia County just the other day. And we expect. Now, it's still early in the season, and it's not really winter-like out there. But as the season progresses, we can expect more snowy owls.
That's a good-looking bird right there.
Oh, it's
delicious.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. They're very
little,
striking.
Tiny dark spots at the ends of its wings.
Yeah.
And how long ago was this?
Excuse me?
When did you see it?
Yesterday morning.
Oh, good.
8:30 in the morning, 9 o'clock.
Well, if he's happy, if he found a happy spot, there's a good likelihood he'll stay there for a good while. So keep checking, email me, and if you have a chance, go to eBird and enter the sighting in on there, eBird.org.
eBird, okay.
And that's a Cornell University website, interactive citizen science, a wonderful opportunity to put in and take out valuable information.
Karen, thanks a lot for that.
Thanks a lot.
So, Nancy, this is not a bird, a snowy owl is not a bird that you can attract with a bird feeder, right?
Nope.
Unless you have little... voles or something in it?
No, their main diet are lemmings on their breeding grounds in Canada. Here they're looking for smaller rodents, so you'll typically find them where there are some grasslands or some open fields for them.
That's pretty exciting.
Many bird feeders will have owls visiting during the dark of the night. They'll be drawn to little critters that are attracted by the spilled bird seed.
Interesting.
And so you'll have barred owls or screech owls or great horned owls that will come in and help themselves to some of the leftovers.
We did have a customer a couple of years ago when the snowy owls were down, and he has a pretty wooded lot, trees in front, trees in back and everything. Works from home, looked outside, and some bird was just a snowy owl was just passing through and was perched in his front yard.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was
one nice yard bird.
What? Yeah, really. That's what I told him.
So they're at times rare, but this year they're back.
They're eruptive, as they're called. When the food source fails up north, they come down here. It's chopping down here. And when the food source is abundant up north, they produce more babies. And then there's an overload of snowy owls up in the Arctic, and they kick the kids out, send them down here, and send them back home again in the spring.
What's amazing, Ray, is that what they've been doing, there's a project that's been going on for the last couple of years when these owls have been coming down with a little bit more frequency, and they've been outfitting them with transmitters that allow them to track their movement. And we actually had one on Saratoga Lake for a period of time a couple of years ago, and they were able to track his movement and, like, where he tended to sit all day long.
And where he ends up in Baffin Island, way up in the Arctic, Canada, for the summer, and turns around and comes down again the next year for the winter.
Oh, cool. Now, is there a website where you can watch the tracking of some of these birds?
There is.
You don't know what it is?
Not off the top of my head.
I would Google snowstorm.
Yes.
Wasn't it that snowy owl snowstorm or something like that?
I will put it on my blog.
That
would
be cool.
In the Times Union.
All right, and we'll find out all about that blog coming up. But right now, we have to take a break, and we'll do that. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here, and Nancy Castillo. We talk birds, and the home stretch is straight ahead.
Support for WAMC comes from Capital Region Language Center, offering classes in several languages at our locations in Saratoga and Colony. Open houses December 14th and 15th. crlcalbany.org for information. Bodhi Spa, Yoga and Salon, Hudson, filled with holiday gifts such as Satcha jewelry, robes, candles, and gift cards for spa services. BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research. Member FINRA and SIPC. Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Offering service, repair, and diagnosis of Asian-made and imports. Specializing in late-model Volkswagen, Subaru, Audi, and BMW. AutobahnTechnic.com. And Albany Realty Group. A local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And what fun we have once a month or so when Rich Guthrie arrives. And Nancy Castillo is with Rich today. And once again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Now, Rich, you have a blog. It's on the Times Union site, right?
That's right. I do a birding blog in the Times Union. And all one needs to do is go to timesunion.com, go to the blogs, and look up birding.
You know,
and in there, you'll see the pictures I took of that painted bunting in New York City.
So you went down and took pictures?
Oh, yeah.
Nancy, you didn't go?
No, I didn't go.
Okay. So you can look at the pictures, too. and in the confusion, which led up to the program, because I wasn't sure if you were actually going to be here today.
Here I am.
I remembered vaguely that you were leaving the country, and I thought, okay, he's gone. He won't be here.
Not yet.
Where are you going?
Cuba.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I know. Matt, we talked about this a year or so ago, and I tell you, it was more daunting than I imagined. But now we've lined up with the university. We're going to be going as a group of on a scientific expedition. This is not the wax museum trip. This is going into the swamp and looking for some of those magnificent Cuban endemics.
Mm.
There'll be an opportunity for spouses. You know, we allow spouse-friendly side trips. Fine. If you want to go see the old cars, I do too.
Okay.
But on the other hand, we're going to be focusing on the stuff science.
Yeah.
The cultural stuff, we'll hear lots of good Cuban music while we're wandering around, but we're going to be spending 10 days down there this coming March, so we'll see some of our native birds that are changing clothes, getting on their best, the finest,
wow,
before heading north, and seeing some of the those really interesting endemic species that are found only on the island of Cuba that have been off limits to us for all these years.
Well, that's
so
exciting.
We're going.
Yeah, and so you'll blog about this.
I will, and I want people who are interested or just curious or just want to follow it to contact me, and we'll speak more specifically about dates, times, and arrangements.
Hmm. Are you going, Nancy?
First I heard of it.
Oh, well, you got to tell Nancy about these things.
This is the first I'm talking about it. This was...
so okay.
You're
that's
the first
exciting.
Because you're closer.
That's
all right.
Exciting.
And you'll bring back cigars and rum for me?
No.
Smuggle it back?
Negatory.
Come on, Rich. You know, you want to be back on the show in 2016. Come on, man. Let's go to Don and Red Hook. Don, you're on.
Hi. I'm sorry I cut you off. I want to know about droppings. Most of the droppings that I have around my bird feeder is white. On my car, there was brown droppings. What kind of bird is that?
Well, it could be anything. It depends on what they've been eating. That's all it is, too. You know, and
oh, really?
If you have grapevines around your neighborhood, don't hang out the white sheets for a while.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Oh, for Christ.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Seriously.
This is where we are now?
Yeah.
Okay.
The man asked, we talked.
Fine.
So it's part of science. It's what it is. So it depends on the food source, and simple as
okay.
that.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. Thanks for that. Don, thanks a lot for that question. I appreciate it. Have a good one, man. Let's go over to Bill in Niskayuna. Bill, anything like that to talk about?
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to keep it a little... G-rated by comparison.
Well, we're not sorry. Go ahead.
Thanks, man. All right, go ahead.
So I'm not so much a bird watcher as I am a nature lover. Myself and my entire family, we spend a lot of time camping and hiking and out in the woods. And, you know, then you see birds, and it's great. So we don't know a lot, but I have one quick question because we run into this a lot. Lately, last few years, it seems we're seeing more eagles. And... you know, before that, and still to this day, a lot of condors and vultures, of course, which I tend to think of as like, you know, ho-hum, kind of boring. What's the easiest, quickest, best way to identify an eagle compared with a vulture or a condor?
Okay, first of all, we don't have condors around here. They do in California, Arizona, but not around here. So takes care of that. But the vulture, a magnificent flyer, they are the masters of the air currents, and what you can tell them at a great distance because they seldom flap, and they hold their wings at a slight angle high, a slight dihedral, and they have a tendency to rock with the waves of air. So you'll look at one, and you'll see it not only just gliding along, but rocking back and forth as if on an ocean wave,
huh.
And that's because they're catching the best of the currents. The eagle, on the other hand, is very flat-winged when it flies. It looks like a flying barn door. It's flat and broad and almost, but not quite, square-tipped. In other words, it gives that sort of very level appearance, a profile. But the vulture will have that slight V and that rocking motion in the air.
If you ever catch even a glimpse of a little bit of red, it'll be the head of a turkey vulture.
All right.
The bald head.
And there are plenty of those around.
Oh, there are.
Yep.
The turkey vulture and a newcomer in town is the black vulture, which is not related to but flies differently than the turkey vulture. And they have an awkward flight. They fly, I like to think of, as a vulture still on training wheels. They just don't got the command. But they flap more often. They do glide. They do hang out together. But he has almost white patches near the tips of each wing. So they kind of stand out. And they have a stubby tail, too. They just, you know, they're not quite complete yet when it comes to the vulture world.
Bill, thank you very much for the call. The number to call here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Nancy, you might be able to field this one. This one came in via email from Bill, who asks the question, is it bad for birds to drink from a small 2-foot fountain pond which has not been treated? Should I add antibacteria like a pool chemical? That's from Bill.
It's just a natural pond?
Well, it's an email, so I'll have to say it's a small 2-foot fountain pond. So I assume that's probably man-made.
Hmm. Oh, okay. If with the fountain and the movement in the water, I think that he'd probably be just fine.
Yeah,
with
no
it.
Chemicals.
Don't do the chemicals.
Yep. Keep the chemicals down. It should be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have to deal with all the time out
and
there.
And the birds will stay away if it's really something terrible, right?
Yeah, or they won't come back.
Right. Let's go to Suzanne in Hillsdale. Suzanne.
Hello.
Hello.
You're on.
Hi.
Okay, so May I came home from my house and I went down into my yard and I saw this bird. At first I didn't know what this bird was. I thought it was either a peacock or a turkey, or it didn't look like it was a vulture. And anyway, that was May. And anyway, through friends and my guys who work my land, they proceeded to tell me that I have a guinea fowl.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Okay.
I call her Clara, but she's probably a Clarence because I haven't found any eggs. In any case, this bird has been here ever since. She's made it her home. And she follows me wherever I go.
Oh, that's cute.
It's a trip. That's all I can tell you. She follows me around. I never really fed her because she'd always eat the remains of my seeds from my bird feeders.
Yeah.
And I heard they eat ticks. But
yes.
But now that it's come to be a little different weather, you know, when I go out to the garage, you know, I will throw some seeds to her. She knows the door opening. She's got the system down. I haven't built anything for her because she's used to being wild. But where she lives in three different places now. She lives under the spirea plant during the daytime, and at night she comes up on my deck where I have railings, and she perches. That's where she perches. That's where she sleeps. She now is now going to the front porch, where she's now perching on the front porch, which is where I was trying to get her because of wintertime, because I got a roof there. I don't have a roof on my deck, and I put out my thing that I use for my gardening, and I'm figuring that I'm going to try to somehow convert that so that I can use seeds there in the winter. Now, this is all my own process here.
Yeah.
But she seems to be very happy. You know, I mean, I'm not going to build a coop. It's just her. I'm not going to get another one. And she obviously likes being here because she hasn't gone anywhere.
Okay, so what's the question?
The question is that I was told that they are very strong survivors in terms of the winter.
Okay.
I was really concerned about, you know, what I was going to do with her for the winter, but I'm trying to arrange this thing on the porch. And I know she's got to be up high because I do know that you know, she's game for predators. I have had foxes that have arrived at my house. And
okay.
She's very astute. She ran up on the tree when she saw them.
Okay. So the answer to, I think, what the question is yeah, you're doing the right thing.
Okay. So they can obviously be outside in the winter. I don't have to, like, think about doing a coop as long as I make sure that she still has access to, obviously, in the wintertime, to seed.
Well, I'm not much of a domestic fowl guy, but I will suggest this. If you go to the Cooperative Extension, Cornell Cooperative Extension website, I would bet you, since that's kind of right up their alley.
Okay.
And look up guinea fowl on their website, the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They will have nice hints and tricks and kinks that you could work out to keep your guinea fowl happy.
Okay, because I have looked online, and honestly, online everybody is like they're major guinea fowl, like they build these houses.
Oh boy,
yeah. Well, you already did that. You have the house. He's moved in. It's only the porch, but that's okay. I would say, you know, just make sure that he or she has a nice perch to go to.
She perches on the railing. That's her thing.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well,
I mean, that seems to be her thing, and it's probably a male because I haven't seen eggs anywhere.
Well, yeah. Nothing. Okay, then. But in any event, sounds like you got it on track there. And again, check with the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They give a lot of help for backyard gardeners and small farmers, as well as, you know, the big commercial and family farms.
Well, Suzanne, that's a great call. That was fun. And let's go to Bob in Holland Patent. Wow. Hi, Bob. You're on.
Yes, a couple of years ago, we had some birds in our carport there, and they had little tiny bugs on them, little black bugs. They look like little beads, like a little, what'd you call it, like a grain of sand.
Like a tick or something?
And they were.
Oh, mite.
And the carport was loaded with them. I mean, you wouldn't see them, but as soon as you'd go in or near the carport, you would be covered with them. You come in the house, and you bring them in the house, and we just had the itch, something terrible. And these birds, there was three nests of them in the carport. They'd never been there before. They were similar lifestyle of a barn swallow, but they were a little bit bigger and a different bird, but their habits and everything was very much the same as a barn swallow. And they were buggy as all get out, and finally, what I did, I took a spray can, you know, with a long shoot bait, and I shot right on the bird to get rid of the nets or whatever it was that was on them and discourage the birds, and they did move out. And then I sprayed the nests with bug killer, and we had no more problem after that.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that birds will carry parasites of one sort or another, and usually they're very specific. They are interested only in the birds and not you. And the numbers sound a little bit astronomical, a little astounding, that they should proliferate to that extent. So,
we were loaded.
I hear what
you're
saying.
You couldn't go near the carport, and you'd be infested.
I hear what you're saying. So, yeah. I think, and I haven't heard any other story like that out there. You know, occasionally I've encountered it when I've gone to band young birds in the nest. And I would have some of these small mites crawl on me, but I know that they're not interested. It's not like the deer tick or something like that that will want to infect or any interest in you. So I would, first of all, I wouldn't worry about it that much. But then on the other hand, it sounds like once the birds are gone, then the problem is solved.
Problem was over. Yes.
Yeah. So your solution was there. I'm kind of like cringe when I heard you say that you were spraying the birds themselves.
Yikes.
With the insecticide. That's
well,
like,
I thought it might get the nets off of them.
Well, but probably carry a little more weight than that too. You know,
yeah.
Unintended consequences. Yeah. But there you go.
Right.
So problem solved, and I hope you're not faced with a similar one again.
Let's go to Chip in Selkirk. Chip, you're on with Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie.
Thank you. Great program, by the way.
Thank you.
Rich, just one comment. Those gulls, I mean, they're really like flying rats.
Well, okay.
Yes, they are.
They're opportunistic. They go after the trash. And
okay.
That's not to put them down, because they do a great thing by eating garbage. And
they're just numerous,
like,
and they're assertive, and and they're on places. They're at places where, you know, that usually don't draw a lot of admiration.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my question. Pileated woodpeckers.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a pair that have been around my area for 15 years. It's open fields and pastures and mixed woodland and creaky areas and things like that, too. Is there anything that can be done to enhance them or track them in other than just having trees that they're going to be after?
Well, no. They're pileated, especially, or pileated, depending on where you're all from. They are kind of like the boss of their own realm, and they'll go to where it interests them. So if you, the other woodpeckers you can draw to suet, but not so much pileated. They will come and they will take suet if they can, if they learn that it's okay to do it. They're a little shyer than the other woodpecker types. And they also like berries, but I've seen them feast on poison ivy berries and be quite happy with that. But aside from that, they're going to go where they want. And they're big enough, and they're big boys. They can choose their own destinations.
Well, I put the suet out, and I've seen the downies and hairies and red-bellied, and you know, a whole array of things of that nature. But they pileated come around close, but not in. And the interesting thing is, by the way, I think I have seen the at least the pair that seems to be a long-term resident chasing away what appear to be interlopers that may be trying to get in.
Well, they will do that. They will stake out their territory. They're not very sociable when it comes to that. But
it's they're fascinating to watch.
Well,
trip to Cuba.
Yes.
We're almost out of time.
Sure that you'll, excuse me?
We're almost out of time. So go ahead.
Great. Don't just stay on the coastal areas. Get into the inland.
Oh, we're going to we have the local experts that are going to take us by hand to the best places.
Yeah,
and
there's
the best
a place called Parque Nacional Aguirre. It's out in the western part of the country, and it is remarkable and something that you might not.
Occidentale Province. We'll be there.
All right.
No question.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Chip, if I can get back to your pileated for just a moment, is that, they're tough to attract to bird feeders, but when we've had customers that have had them at their bird feeder, it's on a big bird feeder. It's a big bird. It's an 18-inch bird. You have to have a big feeder that can they can prop their tail up against and everything. So it's not impossible, but it isn't like I can say, put out a feeder and you'll get a pileated.
All right. Hey, Nancy, what is the website at Wild Birds Unlimited?
We're at www.saratogasprings.wbu.com.
All right. Well, listen, nice having you here. Have a great holiday
season.
It's
always good to be here.
Rich Guthrie, Have a great time in Cuba.
Ah, si, senor.
And remember, the cigars and the rum, right?
I'm going to remember, but okay. Don't count on...
If you
on,
get thrown in the slammer down there, you'll be fine. Support comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film Above and Beyond, American Pilots Turning the Tide of the Israeli War of Independence. Discussion to follow December 20th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 581-584-8730. Unusual Wedding Rings at Moore in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, working with New York Diamond District artisans to create customized jewelry, unusualweddingrings.com. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating, apexsolarpower.com for information. And Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches, ColbyService.com. Well, that's it for the show. Thanks again to Rich and Nancy for being here. Thanks to everybody who listened and who called. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Deb Malik answered the phones. Jessica Blaustein Marshall is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday, and I think we're going to whet our thirsts. Stay tuned now for news.